listeners, and welcome back to the Portsmouth Running Podcast, episode number 76. Wow, 76. I am here, as always, with my very talented cook and co-host, Dave Harvey, who's, I think, you're in the middle of cooking a dal curry.
Do you know what? I'm just stirring it as we speak. I'm going to go sit down now.
I can almost smell it, Dave. Okay. Your cooking, I tell you what, your cooking skills are second to none. I mean, I've had dinner with you a few times, and I've tasted your curries. I've had some of your really nice kind of chorizo and Spanish tapas and stuff, and it's amazing, absolutely amazing.
Yeah. I mean, I do love to cook, but there's a couple of times you've been round, and I hadn't realised that you don't like mushrooms, and I've like inadvertently cooked you a mushroom curry or something.
Mushrooms are the devil's work. They need not be in any food. They need to be banned. They need to. I'm not a fan of the mushrooms. I don't know why. I think it's anything that a Smurf lives, anything that a Smurf can live in should not be eaten.
No, I guess not. I think we cut out just for a sec then.
Oh right, sorry.
Yeah, no, I like your mushroom rant. It's good.
So man, we're here to talk about the Smogathon, Dave. It's our Smogathon special.
It is. So how has your recovery been since the roundabout marathon, basically, isn't it?
Do you know what? There was actually no recovery. And I was having this conversation with Natasha this morning running, because we did the Christmas drawing run with Jack this morning. And I was just saying, like, I just didn't let my legs recover. It was like literally straight from that Saturday, straight back into the next week of training. And I don't want to, like, this next year, I don't want to get back into that habit of not recovering, because I think I'm just getting to that age now where I need the recovery. And it's just, you know, it's nothing to gloat about. I just need to spend some more days off of the feet after a marathon. It's not a short distance. What about yourself?
So I ran the whole thing relatively relaxed, and I was really surprised just how good I felt at the end. And there was no, like, achy legs or anything after it. And went into a full week of training and finished off with an 8-mile hilly run on Thursday, and hadn't felt that good for ages. So in my usual, because I'm a massive dickhead,
you and I both.
Yeah. So my dickhead side came out on Thursday after that run. So I drank like some wine, and then the next didn't sleep at all that night. You have those nights, don't you?
Yeah.
Helps. And then Friday, I was doing an away day with work that finished in an early afternoon meal, followed by pub crawl.
Okay, one of those.
And that ended up in like really smashing the shots, and was drinking probably from like 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the afternoon till about 9:30 when I got on the train. And fell asleep on the train and woke up at the end of the line. And
had a where was that?
Journey home. So that was actually in Portsmouth Harbour. But I needed to get off somewhere like Cosham, really, to make the taxi cheaper. So didn't sleep that well that night either, because I was so drunk. And then for the last like week, I've been run down, washed out, like totally, like no energy. I've run two or three times, and both, it was just really difficult. And
it's your forced Christmas taper for the marathon, Dave. Maybe it's like your body and like all the training this year just kind of going, just a little bit of a lull before that fantastic day next weekend.
Maybe. The Smogathon was fun. How did you find it? What's your
kind of do you know what? Now that I've had time, I'm glad we recorded the last episode just after, and we didn't mention it, and we've had time to kind of sit down and think about it. Because honestly, like, I loved it. I just thought the day was brilliant, and everyone brought the energy. We had 12, 13 people participate to some degree, and I just think it was obviously it's the best race in the world. First of all, that goes without saying, but loved it. Thought it was a great day. Again, the sunshine came out just like it did that first year we tackled it. And yeah, I think we've got a yearly or annual event on our hands here.
Absolutely. I don't know if it's anything that we'll ever be able to charge for, but as a social run that we can all get together, get some food bank stuff for, you know, for, then that's a really good idea. So I totally agree. It was really kind of everyone was had this kind of like sense of humor about it, because no one had run around a roundabout under the M27 before. So I think there was like a curiosity, and no one was really taking it very seriously at all, and neither should you.
No, exactly.
But it was, you know, it ticked a lot of boxes, like running with your friends, having a laugh. We chatted the whole way. We pretty much ran the whole thing together and stopped when we needed to go and, like, you know, went called a nature by one of the pillars of the bridge. So, and it was just great, you know. And we looked forward to having the beer at 13 miles and then another one at 20 miles. And the beer went down well. And there wasn't even any for me or for anyone else in that race that really had a low moment. Everyone seemed to kind of have enough food, have enough beer, and have enough laughs, really.
Mind you, you say no low moments or anything, but I do feel if you were to look at a graph of conversation or noise level between chatter, that last 10K definitely had less.
Yeah. Well, that was when we had the second beer, wasn't it? So we agreed that we were going to do a halfway beer. And then after the halfway beer, because we all felt so good, we thought, right, let's have a 20-mile beer as well. And then, you know, 50 minutes time, we were stopped off and had another can of beer. And then for some reason after that, I think it was James Anderson, suddenly was like, right, I'm going to run like 45 seconds faster.
Yeah, I know.
And we thought, like, all right, well, let's do this then in order to try and stay together. And then Alex ended up kind of like going even faster than that, didn't he?
Yeah, it just wound up.
Clinging on to dear life at the end.
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah, definitely that pace picked up, and I was hurting towards the end. I thought, oh, okay, I'm quite pleased. I'm quite pleased that finished. But yeah, it's amazing. Like, we did 13.1 miles one way and then 13.1 miles the other way with various people kind of joining in for different distances. I know Victoria Henderson, who's our main guest on today's show, she ran 10 miles, I think it was, before she went home. And then Jack did the half marathon. Heather and Hetty, legends, absolute legends, came along with me. And they literally doubled. They doubled our amount of female to male participation in the race, which was fantastic. Brilliant. Yeah, four out of 12, which is the topic of this, obviously, this podcast. But yeah, sorry, carry on. What were you going to say?
Well, I was going to say Hetty was a good mascot when she turned up as well. It was really nice to see her, and she was absolutely adamant, apparently, that she was going to do a lap on her feet.
Yes.
And I think she did it, and then she tried to do two laps, but couldn't quite manage two laps. But she got a little medal in.
Oh, she was amazing. Yeah, she got a special made medal. Do you think the medals kind of went down okay? Because I'll tell you what, mate. When I started making those medals, I was quite into it. I was like, right, I've got my little kind of special calligraphy, pyrography pen, which is one of those. It's almost like a soldering iron, so it burns into wood as a pen. And I enjoyed making the first one. I enjoyed making the second one. By the 10th, I was like, oh, God, get me out of here. I cannot make another medal. And I was just, it was such a slow process, because you've got to kind of like turn the wood rather than the pen. And you've got to like take, right, it's like really careful. So a lot of love and care went into each of those medals. Did you like, have you got yours hanging up?
Yeah, I love them. We've got all three of them, actually. I think we've got the DNF, we've got the 5K finisher and the marathon finisher one. Yeah. So Hetty was wearing all three in one go. Like, disgraceful smoggy child that she is,
bless her. I think she also wins photo of the day, because there's Heather like pushing her in the pram and she's crying her eyes out, and I just thought it was just like, you can see this horrible motorway bridge all gray and then people suffering in the background running. I just thought that needs to be the photo for the 2024 race. Definitely.
So I was when I was planning it, I was thinking that we should sing something at the start, and first I thought maybe we can sing Cannibal Corpse's I Come Blood together. I didn't think anyone would know that, what the tune would be, so we ended up singing Jerusalem. What did you think of that?
I thought it was brilliant. I loved it. I mean, I'd never heard of the song or done it before, but I thought it some of the lyrics like really kind of like, you know, were pertinent, related to the race a little bit, like all the, what did you call them, like Satanic Hills or something was probably one of the lines. Yeah. Or something. It's like, because that bloody hill on that roundabout is hilly, Dave. It's like a, I mean, it's literally like a mini UTMB. Well, there was a satanic, there was a satanic hill.
It's essentially, it's just over a foot per lap, I think. Yeah. So I think it was a total of 118 feet climb.
Yeah, there's 118 laps. So yeah, it was brilliant. Yeah, no, the song at the beginning was amazing. And I think even, I remember like as the song finished, Jack was just, he was elated. He loved singing that. He was like, oh, I would have come just to sing that song.
Well, we'll keep that then.
Yeah, keep yeah. That. Yeah, it was amazing. I mean, I loved kind of everything, you know, even just like meeting up in the car park beforehand and you know, making our way across to the roundabout, getting the snacks out. Obviously, everything we kind of tidied up afterwards, everything was kind of taken home. But it's just such a good event. And I think the cars, they might notice you if they stop at a traffic light, but they just tend to kind of like cruise around. They can't really see too much. Yeah.
How many times do you see cyclists and runners going around that bit anyway? So.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, there's quite a you see a few people out, but I definitely think next year. So I don't know how you feel about this, but what I was going to do was obviously advertise now that if people want to take part in 2024, we're going to do a proper tombola kind of draw. If you've got one of those, what are they called? Yeah. Those things that spin? Are they tombolas? Those things that spin?
Yeah. We'll get a. I think we spoke about this on the first. First Smogathon, didn't we?
Like, yeah.
How hilarious it would be to give it some Western States fanfare with like a gold tombola and big announcement when people's names came out of the hat. Because this year we did it at, what's it called?
The pub, yeah, the Merchant House.
Yes, right.
it was very makeshift, but we need to do it properly next year. So if people want to enter for next year, this is the process. And I figured that there couldn't be anything more simple than this, Dave. I can hear Hetty wants to enter next year already.
Yeah. Hetty, do you want to come and do the Smogathon next year?
Yeah.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah. She's I can see her smiling. So what we do, so if you want to enter next year, you email us at portsmithrunningpodcast@gmail.com and just express your interest in wanting to run the Smogathon. We'll put your name and email address into the hat for next year. Whenever we do the draw, I will keep the names, keep them on the list. And at some point, if you get drawn in the future next year, we will tell you the date, tell you the weekend it is. And yeah, that's it. You're in. So that's it.
Brilliant. And that sounds awesome.
It's relatively cheap, isn't it? I mean, to enter, you just need to bring a 3 items for the food bank. Because I always feel that, you know, having a race is the prize. You don't need to pay money. You don't need to get money. You don't need medals. No. Just, you know, if somebody else can benefit from it, then great. You know, the fun for the runner is taking part.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Sounds good to me.
Awesome. Look forward to it. And how many people do you think we can get around that roundabout, Dave? Do you reckon maybe we could up it to about 25 maybe next year?
Yeah. Brilliant. I reckon so. Really sounds sorry. Good. Hetty's running around saying, well, I put this in the bin.
What is it the Smogathon medal?
yeah
Brilliant. Dave, listen, I've got to say, there was talk at one point, and I don't know how serious the talk was, of turning that race into either a 50k, a 50 miler, or even a 100 miler.
Yeah, see, I reckon a 100 would be good, or even two. That would be fantastic, wouldn't it? So
well, you've just doubled the worst case nightmare. So yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So if you got enough crazy people, we could try the 100. But I think it needs to be in like January or February time. It needs to maximise the potential for hideous weather, all of the wind that you can get. You know, like start on a Monday so there's rush hour.
Oh my god, that'd be a nightmare. Well, yeah. watch the space, everyone. So if you're interested in a 100 mile around the roundabout, then it could be happening next year.
So if there's someone that's up for it, like seriously, and I mean this, I promise, and I mean this genuinely, if there's one or two people that are up for giving it a go of going 100 miles around the roundabout, then I will do it with them.
Okay. And yeah, I'm in as well.
We'll do it together.
Yep. Well, there's Dave, there's you and me. I mean, if you want to spend that much time with me on top of the time we spend together already, then we'll gladly be the first. Take it on.
Yeah.
Brilliant, so, Dave.
You seem to be quite enthusiastic for 100 miles around the roundabout, don't you? So this morning we were talking about the Smogathon actually.
Okay.
And I was saying that just outside the front of my house, I found a triangle route that is probably less than a lap of a roundabout.
Okay.
So given that we've got a Sunderton Lane one where we can just go straight, or Farlington Avenue one where we can just go straight,
yep.
We've got a circular one. So how about we make the triangle of sadness?
I like this. Can we, what, as a marathon first?
Yeah.
So, love it. Love it.
You can start it outside the front of my house. It's got mixed terrain as well. So it's probably 30, 40 meters on tarmac. Go left. And then there's trail.
Brilliant.
And then you go left again. And then when you're on the hypotenuse, there's like a grassy trail type bit as well on there. So.
Well, let's set the date, Dave. January. I'm keen on this. Let's do it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's do
Why
it.
Not? Why not? You can have the most fun in the smaller spaces, Dave. Honestly, I've said it before, but like there is some seriousness in the Smogathon. There is that serious kind of undertone. And I wrote this in an article for work, actually, funny enough, just saying that, you know, you don't like nice routes are great and nice races are fantastic. And there's a time for them and stuff, and seeing all the nice scenery around and all these beautiful coastlines and things. But do you know what? If you're with good people and you've got a good frame of mind and you're up for it, you can have fun anyway, mate. You could.
Yeah, like, definitely.
Like I said, you could smile your way through hell pretty much with good company. And I think it's, you know, that kind of sums it up nicely. But I don't want to keep you too long. I want to kind of move on to our interview. And yeah, like I said, our guest, Victoria Henderson, what a legend. She came along all the way from Southampton to take part in the race in the Smogathon. Yeah. And I thought that was amazing. She's such a legend. I mean, you know Vic better than I do. You obviously coached by Michelle, by the same coach. What are your thoughts?
Oh, well, she's great. She's great. She's got brilliant energy. She finishes races and still looks like she's about to start park run on a Saturday morning sprightly. I
mean, how does she do that?
I don't know. She finished TDS and she was just like, yeah, cool. You know, that was great. I've just like run 100 miles through the mountains and just gone up Col de Trico and back down again. But like, I've not even sweat. So.
Gosh, amazing. Well, one of the photos she sent for this show, which, you know, if people are listening now, they may have seen the photo already on Instagram, but it's of her taking part in the CCC when she didn't have that good a time. And yeah, she promised that she'd send them through to us for us to post, which is great as well. Good sport. And yeah, it was great to have her there. And honestly, the chat we had, I mean, we're not experts at any, we're not kind of authorities in running at all. You know, we're just runners and we talk from experience, but we had a really nice chat about like female participation in ultra running, numbers, things that may put women off running, things that may put, like, you know, new moms or expecting moms off of running. And it was really good to kind of like pick out these little points that you know might be a factor in somebody saying yes to run a long distance race. So and Vic did get in touch herself to kind of raise this as a topic, and I think it's great. And I'm going to do, I've promised to get the next guest on the show as well, somebody, a local runner in Portsmouth who's agreed to come to the show to chat about long distance running. So I'm hoping to get her on maybe just after Christmas or maybe just before Christmas. So again, it's like something that I think we should talk about, and I think it's, you know, it should be spoken about more often. And I know a lot of races are doing, like, changing rules, putting in policies, you know, to kind of change the numbers and make them, you know, a little bit more equal. And I think that's a good thing. So it was a lovely chat.
That was great, man.
Awesome. Great. Dave, cool. Lovely to hear from you. Lovely to chat with you. Thank you for your time again. Thank I know you. you're very busy. Enjoy your dial. Say goodnight to Hetty.
Yeah, cheers, buddy.
Love to Heather. Chat to you soon.
Yeah, take easy, buddy.
Bye. Yes, dude. Bye. I would like to welcome our featured guest for this episode and local runner / ultra runner who has a long string of very long distance races completed, including, I'm going to name a few, Wendover Woods 50K, South Downs Way 50 miler and 100 miler, UTMB CCC, UTMB TDS 100 miler, wow, and also the Arc of Attrition 100 miler. I mean, yeah, I think wow is kind of like the key word there. The string surely makes you a local running legend, Victoria Henderson. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Dan.
How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. I'm having a day off. I've been into town to try and do a bit of Christmas shopping this morning. So, now chilling out at home.
Oh, God. You know, whenever anybody says that to me at Christmas, I'm always like, oh, no, it makes me nervous. I'm like, have I done enough? Have I done enough? I need to get some. Oh, but yeah, I've done the same this year. I'm a little bit more prepared than I usually am. So, but I've still got things to do. It's just
Yeah, I've got a busy week next week, so I need to be organized in advance.
I know. Listen, I'm honestly honored to have you on the show speaking to us, and we wanted to set this up a while ago. But I think it's like really nicely timed because you're preparing, I think probably maybe for one of your biggest adventures to date. So tell us what you're preparing for and when it all is.
Yeah, for sure, the biggest thing I've done so far. So next week is the Centurion's Winter Downs 200 miler, which is the
Cool.
North Downs, South Downs way, and some bits in between.
Okay. Oh my goodness. How are you feeling for it? Are you have you prepared as enough as you can, or how's it gone?
Well, I think the training has gone as well as it could have done. I think I've done everything that I've been asked to do. I have a coach, and so she's written me a plan, and I've done all the training that I think was going to happen. And now there's just quite a lot of organisation to be done. So yeah, I'm pretty nervous, but sort of looking forward to it.
Gosh, I bet. I mean, I saw it advertised, and I just, it kind of like the idea of it ran through my mind a little bit, and I was like, oh my goodness, that's just a it's a long time. Also, it's like a cold part of year, isn't it? So there's all sorts of like prep you've got to be ready for and things. I wish you all the best. I'm really excited, and I can't wait. Hopefully, we'll be out on the course to see you at some point when you come through QE, is it?
Yeah, that's right. That would be absolutely amazing. Oh, I don't even know how far along that is. Over 100 miles, I think.
Oh gosh.
Yeah.
Well,
And also, I don't know what time it'll be, so you have to keep an eye and might be the middle of the night, which wouldn't be so practical.
I'll have to grab some details from you beforehand if there's anybody like we can contact to find out how you're doing, or whether you'll be on your phone yourself or something like that. So we'll have to try and tie up.
Yeah, there's definitely a tracker, so there's some good dot watching. I've got some friends who are quite looking forward to 4 days of dot watching as I travel very slowly in a large loop round the south. I'll have my phone, and hopefully I'll have some crew with me, so there should be people to contact.
Unbelievable. It's absolutely amazing. But obviously we're here to speak a little bit about Smogathon, and more importantly, the topic of women and participation in ultra running. But a little bit before that, can you perhaps maybe like introduce yourself again, give us your name, where you're from, maybe a little bit about what you do for a living, or like what kind of running you do, just generally anything. It could be like an interesting fact, whatever you go, free rein for a minute.
So I'm Victoria. I actually live in Southampton, but I work in Portsmouth. I'm a doctor. I work at QA, so hopefully that counts as being local-ish.
Oh yes, and you've done a lot of running here, so
I'm a mum. I've got three daughters who are now 10, 12, and 15, so life is pretty busy with them. They do quite a lot of sport, so we're always driving around after them and watching them. They play a lot of hockey, so spend a
Okay.
lot of time watching hockey in between my running. I'm married to another doctor, so our working lives are pretty busy as well. And yeah, in my free time, I do a lot of knitting and sewing things. So I like making things as well as being outside running.
Ah, brilliant. Have you got like a little like workshop at home or a room that you use, or?
I do have a little room. It's quite messy and full of stuff that has nowhere else to live. But when I decide to tidy up, it's got a nice space.
It's always the case. I always find with like workshops where you kind of like have a hobby like that, like whether it's craft or making things, there's always like it's like a Santa's kind of workshop, isn't it? Or like an elf's workshop.
Yeah, there's lots and lots of things in there. The children are quite good at taking what they want out of it and then using it to store all the things that they no longer want. But yeah, it's a nice space. My husband would tell you that the rest of my stuff is all over the house. I've got lots of wool and things, knitting projects all over the place, but
Yeah, and it's the dust. Everything, like all the little tiny bits of fabric and stuff, they get everywhere. That's cool though. Nice hobby. Nice to kind of like have something else to turn to. Obviously, when with work being so busy, and obviously all the running and things like that, it's nice to have something else. So that's great. What does the family think of all the running distances, and particularly the husband?
I generally he just sort of rolls his eyes and lets me get on with it. He's really enjoyed our trips out to Chamonix. He does a lot of cycling, so he's come on those trips and done lots of riding in the mountains. So we both love being out in the mountains. That's our kind of happy place. So he really likes those trips. The more local races, he just kind of says, yeah, fine, whatever. The children are pretty blasé about it, I think now. They
Okay.
Oh yeah, what are you doing now, Mum? My youngest did say 200 miles. That is further than you've done before, isn't it? Would that be a big achievement if you finished? But yeah, generally, I don't think that they really understand the distances involved, because when you're 10, 25, 50 miles, 100 miles. It's just, they're just numbers, aren't they? My eldest is a bit more kind of knows what's going on. And I know she does mention it to her friends. Oh, my mum's running 100 miles this weekend. Because some of the mums will be like, Isabel said.
Yeah.
So I think they're kind of secretly a bit proud of it. But yeah, they're not really that interested either. They're like, oh, just tell me when you're coming home.
A lot of people are probably like, yeah, she might have said 100 miles last, but she probably meant 10. And then actually, the truth of it is like, yeah, 100's half of what you're doing next week. It's just utterly mental. But do you know what? Do you know what's really nice about that, though, Vic? It's like it ties in nicely with like the theme that we're going to talk about, which is like, you know, participation in ultra running and the differentiators or difference between male numbers and female numbers or female woman. I never know which terms to use, but say women numbers. And the fact that you're like such a good role model for your daughters. I think it's nice that they're kind of growing up in that household where you're doing that and they can see that's possible. And it doesn't have to be, you know, just the father doing it or the man doing it typically as kind of things have been in the past, I guess, or more so in the past. So have you ever considered that?
I think that's absolutely true. And I think, although they're not particularly interested, it's great they don't see a kind of boundary, like how far you can run. So they will do park runs. So my 10-year-old's been doing the adult park run for a while, on and off. And, you know, sometimes I'll run a marathon and one of them go, oh, it's only a marathon. That shouldn't be too hard. And I think, well, that's good, isn't it? Because if they ever, you know, when they want to do things, they'll realize, you know, they won't have that kind of, I could never do that kind of mentality. Exactly. It's like, well, okay, well, why not? We'll give it a go. And they know that I, you know, there are the odd race that I haven't finished. I think that's a good thing. You know, I really want to do this. This is something that's important to me, but sometimes it doesn't go to plan and you don't actually finish. And that's okay too. You can then try again or try something different. And so, yeah, I do think it's important. And that's kind of part of why, not why I do it, but it's important to me that they see that I'm out there doing stuff that's challenging.
Yeah, I think it's perfect. And it's great. I think it just builds that really kind of in that environment where, you know, you're giving the kids freedom to make that choice in the future and yeah, know that they can do it if they want to. And like you said, retrying things. I know your arc, I think, was finished on the third attempt, was it?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. So to go back and do that race three times, I mean, that's something. But anyway, I think it's all brilliant. And obviously, earlier I listed a few of the races. Some of the listeners will know some of those races. Some of them have tried them, finished them, thinking about participating in them. It's a huge list. But we didn't mention, which was the 2023 Smogathon, Vic. We didn't mention that you took place in that last week and you did a distance. How did you find the event?
It was, well, do you know what, Dan, when you did it last year, I thought you were completely mad. And then I'd had a few messages along the way saying, well, you should come along. And I thought, I'm not really sure about that. But it was actually really good fun. It was a really nice group of people. I mean, I only did 12 miles because I'm sort of starting to taper for the big race. And I didn't think that a road marathon was particularly what I needed in my legs at that point.
Yeah.
But it was a beautiful morning. It was freezing cold, and actually the roundabout has got some decent views.
It's not too bad, is it?
No, it's not so bad. One of my friends, the first response on my Strava, I hadn't even written anything. She just put why.
I love it. It's so true though. Like people would look at that and just go, "There is what? Why?" Like just I cannot relate to that in any way.
I think it was really cold. So actually, and it was quite early, wasn't it? The traffic wasn't that bad. There was a beautiful sunrise. And I had kind of pictured everyone just going around by themselves. But in fact, it was really sociable and it was nice to see everyone and have a chat. And there's a really nice group of guys. It was good fun.
Yeah, I think one of the things I picked up on myself and obviously, you know, the Smogathon is as serious as we take it. It's so serious because we don't take it so seriously, so there's a bit of humor in it. But one of the things I picked up on that I want to change for next year is that there was a couple of people that were tailing behind, and then for them it was probably a little bit of a lonelier circle, because it's not a small circle, you know. If you're at the other end, you can't see or hear people. So I want to try and kind of somehow work out next year how we can make that a little bit better.
Yeah,
it was good fun.
I I couldn't have done the full 26 miles at that pace, I don't think. It was fine. It was fine while it lasted.
Yeah, it was good. Have you got your I felt really guilty, especially I think probably more so for you, and I'm not just saying this because you're on the call, but I felt really bad with the DNF medal because you decided to come along, you're in taper period, so you couldn't really do the full distance at all, and that would have been unwise, but you still got a DNF medal. Are you going to come back next year?
That's
it.
I'll train for it and everything.
We've got commitment. We're going to do it a little bit differently next year. We're going to kind of open up entries via email, and then we're going to do a proper like ballot draw from my house. So we'll make a big deal of it, I think, because
oh, it's a ballot, so you might not even get a place. I might do all the training and then not get to run.
Yeah, but a little bit of insider info here. It says we say ballot, but there might not even be enough entries to fill the race. So, but we're still going to do a ballot because it's fun. That's brilliant. But there was thought. I mean, Dave obviously was the one who initially kind of roped you into it, I guess, inviting you to come along and getting you involved. But we're thinking Dave's already thinking of turning it into a 100 miler. Would you consider that?
No.
No. That wasn't a complete no.
I don't know. Dave is one of those people who every now and again I get messages from him saying, "Do you fancy doing this 50-mile race next week?" Another random, you know, "Do you fancy doing the bridge 200-miler?" And I'm like, no, not really.
Yeah, I know. It's just like how you can just casually put it into a conversation, like this life-changing distance and race that he's always doing it with me, and I feel bad because I would love to race with Dave. You know, we did Grand Union Canal together 1 year. But I've never really kind of like run much with him in terms of racing. So I'd like to do that at some point. But Vic, obviously, let's get kind of back to topic-ish. When we initially kind of spoke about you coming on the show, it was a long time ago. And I think you'd got in touch with me on Instagram and you said, you know, you're a fan of the show, which is still baffles me because Dave and I think that no one listens to the show, but it's great that we do have listeners. You said you kind of like loved our passion about the running, but wouldn't it be good to kind of get more guests on who can, you know, women who are running ultras? And I think, you know, that was kind of sparked off the idea, well, let's get you on the show and talk about it. So I'm like really excited to kind of discuss this because I'm not an expert. So I just want to put it out there. I'm not an expert at all. And I know you've said as well, you're not, but you know, you're more of an expert because you are a woman and you do run long distances. So I guess like maybe a way to start was like from your perspective, like, and you've done lots of like really long races. Is it like noticeable for you as a woman, like the difference in numbers at races and you know, when you're at registrations and stuff?
I think recently there's been quite a big sort of push around women in ultras. Sophie Power's done a lot of work with She Races to try and get more women involved in racing and look at what stops women from entering these sorts of events. So I think I've thought about it more, and definitely there aren't as many women. I tell you, the main thing that makes you realize this is at the start of ultras, there's never a queue for the women's toilets. So everywhere else in life that you go, there are always really long queues for the women's loos and no queues for the men's. And the opposite is true at ultras. So there's never a queue for the ladies' loo and there's always a super long queue for the men's. And it's the one time when you think, oh, I don't have to wait. I'm just going to go straight in. So that that does make you realise that there just aren't as many women at the start line. And if you look at results when they divide them out between men and women, you know, you can definitely see a difference. And on the trackers, so the big races that have trackers, when you look at them, they'll split the men and the women, and yep. Again, then it becomes really clear how many fewer women there are doing the races than men.
Okay, and I think you've managed to somehow hit the nail on the head and find an actual benefit to all this with the toilets. Because I'm thinking, you
yeah,
know,
for
what
sure.
Cues?
And you know, it's easier to do well as a woman. You know, you can come in the top 10 sometimes because there just aren't as many women racing.
Yeah. Oh, okay. It's just, yeah, I just wanted to kind of kick off the conversation and ask you that because, yeah, just from your perspective, what it's like, kind of, you know, when you are there and there's not that many women to talk to, I guess, on the route. It's just going to be like, I guess, the chances are you'll be surrounded by a lot of men in the positions around you. So. Can I just ask you quickly, do you know much about She Races? Because that's, I think I've seen it on Sophie Powell's Instagram, but I'm not sure what it is exactly.
Yeah. So Sophie set it up. She was, she kind of became famous, I suppose, in the ultra running world after the picture was shared of her breastfeeding her. I mean, I think he was like maybe 3 months old when she did UTMB, because she hadn't been able to defer her place for UTMB when she was found out she was pregnant.
Yeah.
So she ended up doing that with a really tiny baby. I mean, all strength to her. I mean, I was back running, but nowhere near running UTMB when my babies were that little. And I think that for her prompted her to set up She Races to try and encourage women into racing and work out what some of the barriers were to women coming into racing. And particularly her focus was on allowing deferrals for pregnancy and childbirth so that women weren't disadvantaged in the big races like UTMB at the time, where you had to get points at that stage and then enter, and you could enter 3 years in a row and then you would get a place. So the entry requirements were quite complicated, and if you then had a baby, you kind of lost your place and that was it. You didn't get to have another go. So I think that's what started it off, was trying to get some races to agree to deferrals for pregnancy. And then it's kind of moved on from there, just looking at all the things that might stop women from racing. And she's kind of set out a list of not rules, but guidance for races that they can sort of look at and then almost sign up to and say, we're going to do all of these things. And then they can say that they're sort of She Races approved. That's kind of the idea, I think.
Love that. Absolutely brilliant. A great way to do it as well. And I think I've actually seen, or I've seen certainly online, examples of race events, I think over in the US or potentially maybe in Europe. I can't remember the name of the one that I saw, but they had that exact policy in place where you can, I think it's like a 3 year automatic deferral, because obviously there's the pregnancy and the whole kind of postpartum period as well, and a whole lot of other factors that kind of come into play as well. So that's good that they kind of got the 3 year option.
Yeah, that's amazing. I think some of the big marathons have signed up now. So I think London this year, you could defer if you're pregnant. And that's a new thing for them. So, yeah, it's really good.
Awesome. Vic, I wanted to mention, you know, the Smogathon, bringing it back to the amazing race that it is. Dave and I were really happy to report that out of 12 runners who ran the Smogathon, 4 were women.
Does that include Hetty?
That includes Hetty. So I'm going to say one was a very, very little teeny lady called Hetty, but still, 4 out of 12 is not bad. So in all seriousness, not seriousness, was it noticeable on the day? Actually, you didn't get to see Natasha when she came.
No. So when I arrived, I was the only woman there. So it was all boys and me.
Oh, dear.
But that was fine. I know some of you anyway, so it was nice to have a chat. So no, I had to then leave because, I finished doing my bit of running and I had to go, and I was back on child driving duty. So I didn't see all the others, unfortunately.
Did you not see Heather and Hetty when they arrived?
No, I'd already left by then.
Oh, no.
Which is a shame.
Oh, dear. Well, we failed on that count then. So minus 1 point for the Smogathon.
Well, that was my fault, not yours. I had to leave.
Yeah, well, next time when you come and do the medal, you'll get to see the whole event end to end. So, you touched on it a little bit, that you've maybe seen more change in recent years, but like you've raced, I guess, long distance, I think for about 8 years now, depending on like the results and stuff. But I think I saw since about 2015 was your first long distance race. You're seeing changes, are you, to encourage more women to run long in the ultra events? And if so, like what changes? Some of them, ones you've mentioned already, but like any others that come to mind?
Yeah, I mean, I think some of the big races that have ballots, definitely it's easier to get in if you're a woman, which I think is good. I mean, I'm guessing if you're a man, you probably don't think that's brilliant. But I think I'm sure that I heard at Lakeland 100 that if you're a woman, you're more likely to get a place because they're trying to kind of even up numbers. I mean, it's a long, long way from being even, for sure. Mm-hmm. The Centurion races are all now, so they have things like period products available. So they're all, you know, if you need anything, if you ask at an aid station, they've got stuff there. They've started doing separate, like if they have portaloos, there are separate portaloos. They definitely offer pregnancy deferrals.
Brilliant.
Yeah, So there's definitely a lot of things. There are things changing, and I think they're trying to just promote women. So If you listen to James Elson, he does a kind of he does a podcast where he talks about after each race they have a little kind of race review, and he always talks about the women's results, which is really good. So not just the men's.
Fantastic. Do you know, and another thing I kind of read as well was, and I do remember the name of the website that I did some of my research from, and I have to mention it because they were pretty good. It was called reaevents.com, or it might be pronounced auraevents.com. They did a really nice kind of blog about their own events and some stats that they pulled from the ITRA. Is it ITRA? All sorts of stuff. Anyway, they did this huge long blog, and they, you know, there was lots of like really good things that kind of that they brought out in that conversation that I'd never thought about before. And one of them was, you know, actually I'm going to add to your list, was the often the start line image of a race that you see like on banners on websites and things. It's often like the front row of races, and it's often just men, you know. And it's like, I guess maybe I think the article said, like, you know, women are less inclined to kind of push their way to the front of races and stuff like that. So you often just see this race with a long banner at the top of their webpage with just men on the start line. And that's just like just one of those things you just never really think about. But subconsciously or unconsciously, it's, you know, it's in the mind.
Yeah, for sure. I think some of the ultra organizers are definitely thinking about that as well, about representing not just women, people of color. So they're trying to promote inclusivity like for everyone, and definitely showing images of just normal people running, which is essentially what ultras usually are.
Running is for human beings and dogs. We don't want to leave out the dogs and any other pets that want to run as well, or any other animals. But yeah, I mean, like you say, the entire topic of inclusivity covers a lot more than just, you know, we're talking about women and numbers, and obviously there's other topics that we do want to cover on this podcast in the future, but we'll save those for another show. But yeah, back to the topic. I wanted to kind of like talk a little bit about toilets, and perhaps maybe it might go down the toilet humor route a little bit, but obviously you know, we've all been there. You know, I don't know, do you think it's like easier for men to go to the toilet in public, and like, have you ever seen any issues or had any issues, or would, like, do you have issues finding quiet spots on the trails? And because obviously there's long periods and long time gaps between aid stations sometimes. And, you know, I think generally, like, physically as a man, it's easier to go to the toilet.
Oh, well, definitely based on my experience, men don't have any problem going to the loo. I mean, I think it is easier for men for sure. They don't seem to worry too much about where they are and what you can see all the time. I have run into problem, no pun intended, in long races, like in the mountains. There aren't any trees, bushes. I've definitely had a few tricky moments where you just think, do you think this rock will be, is this enough? I think over these really long distances, you definitely become slightly less bothered. You know, 20 hours into a race, your idea of what's acceptable is definitely different from what it would be if you just pop out for a 45 minute run at home. So I think most people that have been doing these races for a while work out how they're going to manage this side of things. And lots of the big races do have reasonably frequent aid stations. So in fact, if it's something that you're really worried about, there are definitely races where there are lots of opportunities to use proper loos. But I would say that I would be amazed if there are many people who run ultras who haven't had to duck behind a tree or a bush or somewhere even less appealing at times.
I mean, I had a particularly bad experience that I think I may have shared on this podcast before. At the end of Grand Union, on the canals heading back into London, there's literally nowhere to go, and I just had to go. And I'm always very neat and tidy and everything is, like, you know, without getting into too much detail. But I mean, I kind of, I guess, never considered like those long gaps before when you're into ultras, and like you said, it's easier later on, maybe perhaps when the field's spread out, but if it's not, then it's a difficult thing. And do you think maybe like loos are a necessity for race directors or run directors to consider on the routes, like, every so often, or do you think it's a bit overboard or too hard to do?
I think it's tricky, isn't it? Because I mean, I'm reasonably comfortable with weeing outside, and it doesn't bother me too much. But I wouldn't like to say that people shouldn't consider that, because maybe for some people that is something that really stops them doing these races. Mm. And if it is, then I guess race organisers should be thinking about it. There are obviously practicalities, and if you're out in the countryside, that, you know, it's not reasonable to expect them to put portaloos down.
Yeah.
But I think there are races you can do where you would be able to, you know, you would be able to find loos or make sure there was somewhere that you could go. So all these things, it's wrong for me to say, no, it's fine, everyone should be comfortable with it. But I mean, if it's stopping people doing races, then it is an issue, I think. But there are obviously practical considerations with saying that all races should put portaloos every 10 miles, for instance.
Yeah, that would be hard. But I guess in a city run or a city ultra, then perhaps maybe it's, you know, run directors or event directors could highlight the fact that, yes, there are loos, or perhaps maybe indicate on their race maps that there are loos here, that are not too far away, that they're happy for people to divert off and use. So I guess there are things like that could be done, I guess, to make things easier. But yeah, hey ho.
Yeah, I mean, definitely in cities it's much harder, isn't it? Like, it doesn't bother me if I'm out and about in the countryside, but if you're running through a city, it's definitely that's definitely not socially acceptable.
I know, and I always think back to, obviously, there's the Paula Radcliffe story, which everyone always kind of goes back to. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting. But yeah, I'm glad kind of things are being discussed and looked at, and yeah, things kind of seem to be moving in the right direction. Let's see what happens in the future. Do you think there are a way, like, maybe from your point of view, the races could be more welcoming and create maybe like more of a supportive environment for women in ultra running? And that's not like just in person, like at events and stuff like that, but also on like online, on websites and things like that.
I mean, I think there's been quite a lot of chat in the ultra community, it sounds a bit enough, but in people who run ultras, about the language used around races. So when things are called, you know, ultra difficult and toughest this and hardest that, it can be quite off-putting.
Yeah.
And I think races that come with lots and lots and lots of rules that sound very, very rigid are also off-putting.
Okay.
We've talked a bit about the... Sorry.
No, I was just going to say, like, this, like cutoffs and things.
Yeah, I mean, cutoffs, I think, are fine because it's a safety thing. But lots of rules about, you know, as soon as you finish, you have to leave. There's no to wait around, or you have to arrive at this time, and just things about just the practicalities of transport. And if you're ending up in the middle of nowhere, you know, are you expected to get a taxi at 2 a.m. if you finish 100, you know, a long race? What's safe? Are you expecting people to kind of wander off in the dark by themselves? All of those sorts of things are, I think, probably are off-putting to people. Some people are really worried about running through the night by themselves in the dark. And that, you know, if you don't feel safe, are you going to enter a race that has you running for 10 hours in the dark by yourself? So there are some races that talk about buddying people up overnight. So if that's something that worries you, there are definitely races that have thought about that and are looking at ways to kind of get around those problems. We talked about the image of ultra runners or any kind of races, but actually just showing that normal people do these races. If you turn up to an ultra, and in some ways the longer the ultra, the more varied the people that turn up. I mean, I often stand at the start of races and think that people are going to think I don't belong here. Why am I here? What am I doing here?
Yeah.
But actually you look around and there's every kind of every age, every body type. You know, the fastest runners look like really fast runners, but basically everyone else just looks like a normal person off the street. And actually showing that that's what ultras look like, I think, is really important.
Absolutely. And safety was something that I wanted to kind of cover, but seeing as though you've mentioned it now, I do like the buddy up method when people are kind of rocking up to aid stations on their own and it's getting dark. And I think the idea that you kind of hang around and join a group is a fantastic idea. You know, on the safety topic as well, it still upsets me to see stories. In fact, I heard one very recently. I saw somebody I've actually personally met before, had an event in a tower, like a kind of stair climbing tower race, where, you know, somebody, another, a male participant running up behind wouldn't pass, and then had been patting the lady's backside, telling her to move up. And fortunately, something was done about that, and it all kind of came out publicly. The story came out publicly, and I think action was taken against the runner. But safety, and when you're hearing those kind of stories, still makes me think there's a long way to go.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's not, certainly my experience of running ultras has not, I've not had any issues with fellow runners. Mm. And in fact, I don't think I've really felt unsafe when I'm running. And some of that, I think, is, it's just a misguided thing. You know, you're in a race, so you feel like it's okay, even though you're on the South Downs and it's the middle of the night.
Yeah.
And I would never normally go for a run by myself in the middle of the night. But somehow, because you're part of an event, it feels okay. I mean, that probably isn't hugely sensible, but almost if you're in the middle of nowhere, I think you're much less likely to run into problems because there just aren't people around in the middle of the night. I definitely feel more worried running in the dark through towns, and certainly some of the race next week has got some bits that go through some towns, villages,
mm-hmm.
and that's going to be pretty spread out. And there are a few bits that I've been through when I've recce'd bits of the course and thought, not sure about this, you know, that sort of like 11 midnight, 1 in the morning time.
Yeah.
So we'll have to see how that goes. I mean, you've got trackers. I don't think there's going to be a lot of people around, and the chances are it's all going to be fine.
Yeah.
But I think there are definitely women, and probably men as well, who feel like running by themselves through the middle of the night isn't something that they're desperate to do. So yeah, I think racers are definitely are aware of that, and there are more sort of not allowances made, but that people are starting to think about how they can mitigate some of those worries for people.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I've felt unsafe before a couple of times on the Downs where, you know, you are, like you said, you are out in the middle of nowhere and you're expecting not to see anybody at 2 in the morning. And then suddenly there's a car on the South Downs and you're thinking, oh, crikey, what's a car doing out here? And then it stops and then people get out and you think, oh, my goodness, what's going on? That's happened to me a couple of times. And yeah, you just feel a little bit unsafe. So I think from a woman's point of view, maybe it's, you know, it's probably a lot more accentuated, and like you say, through stories you hear and things you see on the internet and things you read, it must be quite a worry. But hopefully, like you say, things are changing and yeah, more allowances are being made, etc., with events. Vic, we mentioned earlier about you know, things that race directors or event directors are doing to put in place more opportunity for women to race longer, and one of those was something that I've read that race directors are doing at the moment, which is reserving a portion of slots for women to race in. So basically, I guess, trying to equal out the number of entries equally. Do you think that idea is a good idea?
I mean, I think it's a great idea. As a woman, I think it's a brilliant idea. Yep. I think it would be fantastic if race directors did that. And also if potentially they released some slots a little bit closer to events. So certainly for me, and maybe this has got slightly easier as I've got more experienced at running, and maybe as my children have got a bit older, but actually committing to things a year in advance can be really hard. Our jobs don't make that any easier either, but when there haven't been clear rules on pregnancy deferrals and you don't know what's going on with your family, actually committing to races a year in advance for some of these really big races is quite tricky. Now, I also appreciate it's tricky for race directors because they need to know that they've got income, so they need to know that they've got enough money to put these events on. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of these big events always sell out, so the places are always going to be taken. But just giving people a chance to have a little bit more time to make that decision, I think would be brilliant. But I, on the other side, I can see why they don't want to do that. But if there is an opportunity to positively, positive discrimination, is that it? So to allow women more spaces. So I don't know that there are any ultras that have 50% women on the start line, but if you're running a ballot system, it would be great to allocate more of the places to women so that maybe you aim for, say, 25%, as opposed to just pulling the ballot completely randomly. And I mean, a lot of the races that have ballot entries obviously aren't entirely, you know, they're not always pulling their ballots out in public. So they may well already be doing that. And I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, I agree as well. I think it's definitely the way forward to try and equal it out as best as possible. And I think maybe for the 2024 Smogathon, Vic, we'll do something like that. We'll set aside some entries for the women out there who want to come and do the event. I know of a few who've already approached me actually who want to come and do it next year. So
amazing.
there is going to be more. There is definitely going to be more. What I guess like a bit of a general question, and you know a lot of it we've already covered, but just like generally as well, like you as an ultra runner, like your hopes for the future of women's like participation in ultra marathons. Are there any like other changes that we haven't mentioned that would be nice to see in the sport? Like anything general, big, small, anything?
That's tricky. I think a lot of the changes are already happening. My kids are obviously older. The pregnancy deferral, I think, is really important. It's a really tricky time to keep running, to keep motivated to run. And actually, any races that require you to have, there aren't many in this country, but, you know, if you need points to do things or the stoned collection, if you're doing the UTMB type thing, all of those can be really difficult around the time that you're having a family. And so those policies, I think, are fantastic. There's a lot being done in terms of having period products at races and making it much easier for women to access those.
That's
and having
great.
Places that women can change period products if they need to. So I think all of those conversations are happening, which is fantastic. I think just I'm just getting the word out that normal women run these races, you know, is the most important thing, which is why I think this podcast is great. It's lovely to have a chance to just say to women, please come along. These races, you know, you don't start with 100 miles, well, you can, some of them, but 50Ks or 50 miles, but 50K is a lovely distance, a trail race. Mm. It's not a marathon. No one's going to ask how fast you did it. It's not like you're trying to run a good for age time for London. These are fantastic trail races. They're usually in lovely places. You're outside in nature. And it's not about the time that you finish. It's about the experience and being around other people. And it's just so different from road races. I would just encourage everyone to just have a go.
Mm, absolutely. You'll be pleased to know that, well, I think I've got a few shows lined up where I'm getting some local women who are running some incredible races at the moment, some really like long distance, hard, gnarly stuff in the hills and mountains in Portsmouth here. And I've got one lined up very soon. I'm super excited to get onto the show and talk about. So we're going to be, you know, on top of what you just said, we're just, you know, we're just normal people running these races. There are normal women out there running the races, people who have jobs, families, whatever. It is possible to do. And I think you're kind of great role model kind of saying that and getting that message out. So hopefully this, you know, things as a podcast, as a small podcast we are, that we can do to kind of help as well and get that message across. So I know that was one of your requests to us was, you know, get more women on talking about ultra running.
That was brilliant.
Yeah. You're really passionate about it. And I think, you know, certainly these days I'm on social media a lot. I do a lot of Instagram posing or posting depending on how you call it. But you know, one of the things I do the dreaded scrolling through Instagram. It's a hobby of mine. I set myself a little bit of time each day to do it. I do enjoy it. You know, I know it gets a bad rap kind of scrolling, but you know, I do read posts. I do look at what people are doing, and I do see a lot of women out there on Instagram kind of doing some incredible things in racing. And I know you've already mentioned Sophie Powell and her famous iconic photo of her breastfeeding her child during UTMB. I did get a chance actually to meet Sophie once in London, very, very briefly, and she's a lovely lady. Obviously, Camille Heron, Courtney DeWalter, two American ladies breaking records all over the place, running incredible races. You know, I think Courtney DeWalter finished the three hardest races or three of the hardest races in the world this year and won them all, I think. Obviously, people like Anne Trason, Ellie Greenwood, and of course, Michelle Maxwell. Did we mention Michelle?
Yeah.
She's been a guest on the show.
Yeah.
I mean, she's amazing. As a runner, she's absolutely incredible. And just a superb, another role model out there who's not only running herself, but coaching people to some incredible results like yourself.
Yeah. Definitely. And some of the people that you've mentioned are obviously incredible, like Courtney DeWalter. She always looks like she's having an amazing time running. She makes it look easy. And, you know, we all know it's not easy to run that fast and to win those sorts of races. those women are fantastic, and it's brilliant that people are starting to talk about the women's results as well as the men's results. And if you follow things like UTMB, it was interesting, like Jim Walmsley won for the men this year, and someone said to him, you're the first American to win, and he very rightly said, after Courtney, who's won it before, you know, I'm standing, and there are some other American women as well. He was really clear, you know, that he said, I'm not the first American, I'm the first American man, but not the first American, because the women have been doing it for a few years already. Yeah. And that's brilliant. It's fantastic that they're in the media. But the main thing that I want to say is that you don't have to win races. You don't have to be running really fast to take part. There are lots of women who aren't winning, and that's great too. Like, there are lots of normal women running ultras. It's not the people that win. You know, the people that I admire the most are not the people winning the races. They're the people who run and they've got jobs and children, and, you know, they're not winning. They're just there to compete against themselves, to enjoy the experience. You know, we're all going to finish middle of the pack somewhere. And that for me is that those are the best results.
Mm, absolutely. Well said. And yeah, I mean, the examples I kind of hit out there were, you know, the ones that you kind of generally see on Instagram quite a lot of. But yeah, you're right. There are, you know, you don't have to be winning the races. Those are just kind of examples of, you know, where women are being like really keyed out and highlighted. And I think it's great. It kind of adds to the message as well that things can be done like that.
Yeah, for sure.
In terms of social, where can people follow you? Because obviously we've discussed a lot, and you know, we could chat for hours on this topic and go on for absolutely hours. And I wanted to kind of talk to you a little bit more about the Smogathon, but I don't want to keep you forever. If people want to ask you questions or find out about some of the races you've done or how you've kind of handled your training, where can people reach out to you and find you?
So I am on Instagram. I think I'm at Vixo Henderson on Instagram. I mean, I'm definitely no influencer. No one's going
yes,
to be
you
hitting
are.
Me up for, no one's going to be hitting me up for any product placement anytime soon. But I do look at Instagram, so, and I'm happy to reply to any messages on there. That's absolutely fine.
Yeah, that's what I mean. The products are a whole another thing. I mean, yeah. But you are, you know, you're an influencer in yourself. The fact that you've kind of come on here and you're outspoken about the topic, and we've had this discussion, people are going to listen. People are going to get some ideas, have some more conversations around this, hopefully. And this is what it's all about. Just, you know, you are influencing in your own way. There you go.
Well, I'm very happy to talk to anyone who thinks they might want to try an ultra, who wants any advice. Absolutely. I'm very happy for anyone to contact me. I love talking about ultras, and I think it's just a brilliant sport, and it's super friendly, and it's just great to be outside.
Perfect way to end off. But before we go, I'm going to ask you a few questions.
Yeah.
I haven't done this for a little while, actually, but I like these kind of like fast fire questions. So I've got just a few here. Are you ready for them?
I am.
Here we go. So they're nice and easy. What shoes are you currently running in?
Oh, I'm afraid, Dan, I run pretty much always in ultras.
Oh.
So my toes like some space. I have one pair of Hokas, but yeah, generally ultras. I'm wearing Ultra Mont Blancs for the big race next week. I think that's what I've decided on.
Are they cushioned? Are they like flat? Are they how do they feel?
Yeah, no, definitely cushioned. With a reasonable tread. So there's going to be a lot of mud. But there's also some road sections, so it's tricky to know what to wear. So I'm hoping that'll be the right choice. Who knows?
Good. People always like kind of ease me into the disappointment that the fact that they're not going to say Hokers. So I really appreciate that. Thank you so much for just kind of like laying me down nicely there. What's your favorite pre-long run meal? So something that you'll have before you go out, if you even fuel yourself before you go out.
I always fuel before I run, Dan. Very important. I do most of my running in the morning, so I usually have the same breakfast. I have oats with some chia seeds and some peanut butter. Very boring. I have the same thing every day.
Peanut butter actually kind of like spread onto the oats?
So I don't really make it into porridge. I just heat it up for a minute in the microwave. Sounds disgusting. With some chia seeds and then a spoonful of peanut butter stirred through.
I've never tried the peanut butter. I love peanut butter. So I might have to go into the next bowl of oats.
Oh, yeah. It's the best.
Can you name your three, and I'm going to say favorite or useful items that you carry in your ultra backpack?
Well, always water and food, but I guess they're taken for granted. I have a little, it's a little tiny Ziploc bag that has a selection of, it's got blister plasters and it's got one of those foil blankets. It's got a tiny whistle. And it's got cash of various. So it's got some French francs and some euros, sorry, and some Swiss francs and some pounds. So you never know when you're going to need a bit of money.
You're planning to run very long distance. Yeah, I hope you're not planning to end up in France on the south from the South Downs.
Yeah, that would be a wrong turning. But you know, I'm not very good at swapping these things out, so it's left over from previous adventures. So that pretty much always goes in my pack. And so I know that if I really need it, that's there for emergencies. Usually a jacket of some sort, a waterproof jacket just in case.
Okay.
One other thing. Well, I always carry water, always some fluid and some kind of fuel, and usually like a spare one more gel than I think I'll ever use, just because you never know when you're going to need it.
Okay, great. That's good. I like the cash idea. That's something I don't do, so I might be thinking about carrying a £10 note now, especially now they're a little bit more plasticky and probably waterproof, which is good.
Yeah, although lots of places now won't take cash, but I don't know. You never know.
That's very true. Yeah, you never know when you're going to kind of come across an ice cream van or something that doesn't take cards yet.
Yeah, or if your phone runs out of battery.
This is true. This is true. Which is why a bank card is always good. But now there's just too many options. So whatever.
Yeah.
Money. That's it. Vic, what's the most challenging thing or moment that you yourself have ever faced during one of your ultramarathons?
What year was it? 2021, I think I did CCC. Mm-hmm. I hadn't really done enough training because it was the year of COVID. We'd had work was obviously really busy. The children had not been in school. The whole thing was just complete chaos. And then we weren't allowed to go to France, or you could go to France, but you couldn't come back. So I think it was about 3 weeks before the race that we finally knew that we'd be able to go to the race, because they'd released the travel restrictions. So I really hadn't done enough training. And anyway, I went to do it because I had the place, and you know, there wasn't any other option. You either, it was a use it or lose it kind of situation. I started being sick about, 26, 30 miles in.
Okay.
And I just didn't stop being sick basically for the rest of the race. I hadn't eaten anything. I hadn't drunk anything. My husband took a series of really terrible pictures. Well, no, they're good pictures, but I look absolutely terrible in them. I told him he didn't have a future as a race photographer. It's hard to imagine someone looking any more sick than I look in these pictures. But I was absolutely determined to finish, because I said to him at the time, I am never coming back to this race. Do not let me stop. And I finished, but felt, I've never felt so unwell as I did after that race. And I did then go back the year after and did TDS, which was a very different experience. But yeah, I never want to feel like that again. It was awful.
Did you feel better during TDS? Did you prepare better?
Yeah, I trained a lot better. TDS was brilliant. I absolutely loved it. I mean, not every second, but generally I loved it, and I finished feeling great. I probably could have gone a bit faster, but actually that wasn't the point for me. It was to kind of put the demons of the year before to bed and just have a great race, which I did. I absolutely loved TDS.
Brave,
one of my favorite races.
Brave decision and brave choice to come back the next year again after that, because I had an equally horrific experience about halfway through CCC as well. Just got very, very ill. Just didn't want to carry on, but yeah, got to the end.
That's about the best that you can say about a race like that. It's over.
Yeah, pretty much. And it's hard to prepare for those things. I mean, I thought I was doing some climbing, but you know, when you hit those climbs at CCC, they're something else. They just go forever.
I think going back a second time, at least you're more prepared for that. And we're very lucky that we go to the mountains every year. So I have spent a bit of time, I say running, it's not really running, is it? Like walking up mountains. And it's one of my favorite places to be. So yeah, but CCC was definitely not a good race.
One to maybe go back to itself at some point in the future. But anyway, Vic, finally, I know you've said a lot. We've covered a lot of points, and as I said, we could talk for hours. But was there anything else that you kind of like wanted to add, finally, about anything running related, the community down here in the South, your own running coach, anything? Your last chance
I mean,
to say your piece.
other than that, I would love everyone to have a go at an ultra. I think that the community is just, it's just amazing. You can run a race and you feel like you're being looked after from start to finish. It's like being in a kind of warm hug for a whole weekend. Just people, it just restores your faith in kind of humanity, I suppose. There's really good people around, and I think runners are generally like that. Certainly when I came to the Smogathon the other weekend, it's just really nice. You have a chat with people, they're already friendly. You can talk about running, but it doesn't have to be about running. You know, it's not everyone who goes, what races have you done? What's your time for this? How long did you take to do this? You know, it's just really kind, friendly, lovely people. And I think that's my overriding feeling about, particularly about trail running. I suspect, I'm not sure that road running is quite the same, but trail running is definitely just a group of really friendly people.
Brilliant. Love it. And yeah, I can't echo the same points enough, really. It's just, yeah, brilliant. We're lucky to be involved in a brilliant sport, brilliant people, lovely community. Everyone's helping each other. And yeah, I'm going to call you Vic the Influencer from now on because it's been great to have you on. And I think, it's like, I just love it when people reach out like you did and say, hey, you guys, you've got the show. I do listen to it. I know we had met a couple of times before through interactions with Dave, and I really appreciate you getting in touch and kind of raising this point and us eventually getting around to having the discussion. I know it took a while, but we're here now. And yeah, I'd just like to thank you for taking the time to come on in your busy schedule. And yeah, from myself and Dave and I'm sure all the listeners as well, good luck next week.
Oh, thank you. And thanks for having me. It's been really good fun.
It's an absolute pleasure, Vic. Look forward to seeing you soon, hopefully on the race and also at next year's event that you've already committed to on a public podcast. Brilliant.
Absolutely. Can't wait, Dan.
Take care. All the best. Bye.
Bye.